Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
Michelle Hasty is a weight loss coach and author with experience in personal training, food psychology, neuro-linguistic programming, and yoga. She says that we can have our cake and be happy too. Her book presents a joyful approach to weight loss. Michelle Hasty, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you wrote a book before your newest book. And what was the reaction when you presented your ideas in this book that made it sound too good to be true?
That's exactly what people said. It sounded too good to be true. But when they really looked at the concepts, they realized that it's really simple. And that's kind of what I hope I outlined here, is that it's more simple than we're making it.
Well, you might mention the name of your previous book.
Yeah, so the previous book is The Weight Loss Shift, Be More, Weigh Less.
And in that title, you say be more. You don't say do more. You don't say exercise more. You say be more.
Exactly. That's the whole premise of the book, is everyone, I think, is doing it kind of backwards. And so I really wanted to get people to focus on this step that they're just skipping right over, going right into what should I do? And let's take a step back and, like, who are we being first?
Well, when I read your first book, I thought, okay, that's very nicely stated. So why did you feel the need to write another book?
It just kind of happened. It wasn't really planned. And then I felt like, you know, I think it's really important that people take a step back and focus on who they're being. And I still wanted to give people the how-to. So once they sort of set the foundation for, okay, I'm ready to become someone who doesn't have a weight problem, let's say, then what do you do after that? And I felt like because that first book was so focused on being, that I needed to write the book then comes after that. So now what do I do?
Okay, so how do I be? So you want to get practical tips. Okay, here's what you do.
Correct.
But now, this is a hard sell, Michelle, when you're telling people, oh, just be thin.
I know. Easier said than done, right?
Yes.
I hear that. I mean, I definitely do. And I get that it's easier said than done, but we do have to at least think about that topic. Think about that conversation in our heads of who we're being. If every day we wake up and say, God, I'm just so fat. I'm just a fat person. It's just the way that it is. That is going to affect your results. And so I wanted to open that conversation at least.
Well, at one point in your book, you say food doesn't cause weight gain. Your thoughts do. Food doesn't cause weight gain. Your thoughts do. Now, Michelle.
I know. It's a hard concept. But we have to look at who we are as eaters and how we eat. Everyone on the planet is talking about what we eat. And it's not working, is it? I mean, people are not getting thinner. We're having more issues with obesity, more issues with binge eating, more issues with stress eating and overeating. So if we keep looking at what we eat, we're just going to keep going around the same circle over and over and over again. So I said, well, what about how we eat? Right? Because we can actually look and study people who are overweight and people who have never had a weight problem and watch how they eat and ask them, interview them. Who are you as an eater? And that's what I did in my thesis, just to find out. And the results between the two groups were drastically different. But what they ate wasn't that different.
Well, now people look at you, Michelle, and say, Michelle, how can you be giving me advice when you're so thin yourself?
Not
always. You don't understand what it's like to be an overweight person, Michelle.
Yeah, if you see me today, but if you met me 10 years ago, that wouldn't be the case. And that's kind of hard because my clients do meet me today and I can show pictures, but they don't know what was going on in my head. But I too was a binge eater and a stress eater and an overeater. And I spent all day obsessing over what to eat, what not to eat. The fact that I ate too many calories, am I exercising enough? Am I exercising hard enough? And I was in the same game as all my clients, so I can honestly say I've been there.
Well, what did this to you, Michelle? Do you know, is it our culture that makes young women think the way you were just describing?
Not originally for me. I think it definitely when I talk to clients and I ask them when they first struggle with weight, a lot of them will say from a very young age, or they'll say all my life. And I do say culture is influencing that. For myself personally, it didn't affect me until the day I decided that I wanted to become fitter, healthier. And when I set my focus on that, I jumped in that same sort of hamster wheel that all my clients are in, which is you just become obsessed. Not everyone, but as soon as I dieted, I became obsessed.
So you're listening to all these voices out there that say, Michelle, just use a little willpower. Just get out there and exercise and watch what you eat.
Yeah, easy to say, right, from a distance. If it were rational, we wouldn't be having this problem. If it were rational, then gastric bypass would work every time because it takes away some of appetite. But this isn't a rational thing. We're talking about, I know rationally I should exercise more. I know rationally I should eat healthier. But these people are not in a rational space yet. And so we do have to meet them where they are, which is, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that I am sitting on the couch when I want to be moving. And that's where I'd like to meet people to help them get from that space to a space where they can make rational decisions about what they want to do and what they don't want to do.
So how did you organize your book?
So this book is organized in 7 steps. And I really thought about what are the 7 steps or things that you need to do to become someone who can have your cake and be happy too, as we're calling it.
As in the title of your book, Have Your Cake and Be Happy Too.
Yeah, I wanted to say, what can we really focus on? What are the 7 most important things that we can focus on to actually not just lose weight? Of course, that's a big chunk of it, but become someone who doesn't have a weight problem anymore, who doesn't struggle with weight, which for most of my clients is so far off in another universe, they can't even imagine living that way. They can imagine losing weight because they've done it before. But to become someone who never has to lose weight again, that's the new topic to introduce here.
My guest is Michelle Hasty, and she is a personal trainer, a weight loss coach, and author. And you start your book, your introduction says, it's a typical weekday. You wake up at 6 a.m. to a blaring alarm or your son jumping on the bed demanding breakfast. And as you're describing this, and you say you pass by your mirror and see yourself, and there it is, the 30 pounds I just can't seem to lose. Is this somewhat autobiographical or is this taken from your clients?
It's both, because when I was struggling with my weight, I didn't have a son yet. So it's definitely taking how I felt then, but putting it in what my age is now and how I would experience that today. So I have a almost 3-year-old. Yeah, exactly. If I hadn't changed, and it'd probably be a lot more than 30 pounds. But had I not changed, this would be what I was experiencing today.
So somebody picks up your book and is reading this introduction about how you wake up and you try not to even look in the mirror. And then so when you do, then you turn away from the mirror and you walk toward the kitchen, and I think people can, unfortunately, can identify with the scenario that you described, Michelle.
Yeah, I tried to really think about putting myself back in that space and how I felt each and every day and how painful it was, and most people would look at me and they thought, she's a happy person, you know, I was doing okay with my job and I was in college and everything seeming, I had friends and everything looked okay on the surface, but inside it was like a tornado.
Well, and you say, you know, as long as you stay busy, you won't think about food. So you do your best to fill the time. As soon as a lull hits though, the food starts to call to you.
Yep, that's exactly. So as long as you keep yourself busy, then everything is fine, people will tell me. As long as I'm not at my house, then I won't overeat. But as soon as I get home, then the binge starts. And that's what it was for me too. And that's what my clients say. And it's because you're finally having that moment of downtime where you don't have something to distract yourself. And so you have to face what you don't want to face.
So you're describing this scene. It's probably pretty typical that this person is thinking about food. And I know a woman who pretty much came around to the conclusions you reached, and she knew she'd reached a turning point when she looked in her pantry and saw some chocolate that she'd forgotten was there.
It's huge.
That is huge.
It's huge. I've had those moments. I remember one moment in particular where I was eating a Lara bar. I'm pretty sure it was a Lara bar. And I was sitting in my car waiting for a client. This was many years ago, right in the beginning of my journey of all this. And I was eating and I was breathing and I was enjoying and I was tasting, and because I was really hungry and it was in between clients. And then I didn't even think about it. Halfway through, I just closed it and put it down. And then I was just thinking about, okay, what am I going to do with this client? And I went, oh my God, I just ate half a Lara bar. It's huge.
So that's in your introduction. You write something that a lot of women in that situation can identify with. And then you ask a question, are you ready for a better way? What does it mean to lose weight while living your life? Because what you just described doesn't sound like you're really living your life if your every thought is, when can I eat? And when that you're consumed with the thought of food. And so you ask that question, what does it mean to lose weight while living your life?
Well, I don't know of a weight loss method out there that doesn't ask you to put some aspect of your life on hold to lose weight. I have a really big problem with that. I have a really big problem with wasting any minute of my life or sacrificing any minute of my life. So I try to live in a place of choice and a place of freedom. And I just don't know how you can do that in those other methods. And I feel like, why would it be any other way? Why would we have to sacrifice and struggle for a period of time to reach freedom? How does that happen? Or to reach peace?
Well, I'm not living my life now, but when I lose those 30 pounds, then I'll start living my
life. Absolutely. And that's not, you know, to anyone's fault. It happens because we set up those statements, when I lose weight, then I will have. And then when we really look at them, we realize so many of those are not attached to weight at all. We can just cross off that weight equation in the middle and just do the thing we want to do.
Well, you say this book is based on the premise that you can lose weight while you live your life, that you don't have to put anything on hold to succeed, that you don't have to suffer to have weight to go through this process that you're suggesting, to have the body that you want. You don't have to wait. You don't have to suffer to have that thin body.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, the body's going to do what the body does, you know, in terms of storing fat or burning fat. We have a lot of influence over it, but we don't do it directly. The body does it. And so my focus is on, what do we have direct control over? Our thoughts, our feelings, you know, the way we live our life, what we do day to day. And so those are the things I try to focus on influencing first before trying to take on the role of burning fat, which, as far as I know, I don't have a clue how to do. My body does, but, you know, I don't know how it does that. I don't know how it heals like broken bones or men's wounds or makes my heart beat. It does all these things for me. And burning fat is just another one of those things it does for us.
Well, we mentioned that you set your book up to have seven steps. You say live connectedly, live intentionally, live joyously, truthfully, abundantly, deliciously, fully. And you say that these seven steps will set up your most incredible life, your ideal body. How is that possible? Shall we start with live connectedly?
Yeah, I think we got to go one by one.
How do you live connectedly?
I mean, the thing about any other weight loss method is that it causes you to disconnect from the body, and it has to, because there's no way your body is going to like the kinds of extremes or some of the rules that you put on it. Like, some people just do shakes, you know. Okay, well, do you think your body really just wants shakes? Maybe not. Or do you think your body really wants to work out that hard every day? So we have to disconnect from the body in order to succeed in most of the weight loss methods that we choose. And I'm saying that I don't know how on earth you can succeed in losing weight if you're not connected to the body, because the body does it. It would be like trying to use a puppet when you have no strings. Like, you have to be in connection with the body for it to work in your favor. And right now we're all trying to do it without it, and it's impossible. It feels impossible because it is impossible.
To disconnect, you say, when we are disconnected from ourselves, the body says it's hungry, we stop to calculate whether we have enough calories left in our daily allotment to feed it.
Yeah, we don't even trust it.
Yeah, our body's telling us it's hungry. And said, no, wait a minute. Now, I've got to see how many calories I have left. Then I'll know whether you're really hungry.
Exactly.
Or whether I can feed you or not. We wouldn't treat our pets that way.
Exactly.
Or we choose a food based on what somebody else told us to eat rather than what our body says it needs.
Talk about complicated. The nutrition world is the most complicated world we can have, right? There's everything contradicts one another, and everyone Every expert out there is totally qualified with years of research, and it totally contradicts the thing next to it, which is also backed by research with, it's like, who can keep track?
So you say step one in living connectedly is to become present and aware in life, and that requires you to get to know yourself.
Yeah, you got to know who you are. You know, I ask really specific questions to clients to try to figure out who they are, because that's going to make it possible for me to help them. I got to know, how do you operate in the world? Where's your stopping points? What's your personality? Where does your motivation come from? What makes you hide under the covers and never come out? Or, you know, I need to know these things and for me to help you. So if I need to know it, you obviously need to know it too. Otherwise, how are you going to help yourself for the rest of your life?
We're going to take a break, and then I'll be back with my guest, Michelle Hasty. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman. I'm Nancy Wiegman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guest is Michelle Hasty, author of Have Your Cake and Be Happy Too, A Joyful Approach to Weight Loss. So you say, why are you here? Do you hesitate to take action unless there's a guarantee? Or are you a risk taker who's willing to try anything even if it fails? Do you procrastinate until it becomes so uncomfortable you can't stand it? Or do you act instinctively without thinking too hard about it? So these are some of the questions that you apparently ask your clients to consider so that you can get to know what's their personality like?
Yeah, I think we're all sort of curious. Like, most people really like to take those quizzes that tells you, you know, your personality or how you operate or how you best get results. Like, we're all pretty curious about ourselves and how we operate. So this shouldn't be totally foreign, but we have to look at that before we start taking action. Otherwise, we're not sure if we're choosing the right method or strategy.
Because some people want social approval, and they put more belief in what others think than their own. And you say, or do you put more emphasis on what you think and feel?
Yeah.
Because I think we grow up as kids. We take our adults' word for things. Here's the way the world is.
Yep.
An adult tells us something, then we accept it. But you say, do you put more emphasis on what you think and feel?
Yeah, and the magic question there is, if there is no one else on the planet, and it's just you, like there, for some reason everyone was gone and you were left, and that you were okay with that, and you moved on and you're like, okay, now what? Would you still want to lose weight? Or if there was no one there to witness your weight loss, would you say, forget it? Because some people would say, well, if no one would see it, then I wouldn't care. And some people would say, no, I really want to be thinner for me. And that's important to me. So that's kind of the way you can know which side of the coin you're on for that one.
And you also say, do not try not to judge your answers to these questions. The point is not to judge. The point is just to paint an accurate picture of who you are so that you can begin making changes. And you say this is time to get honest.
Yeah, we have to figure out where we are to move forward. And it's hard because people are avoiding mirrors and avoiding cameras, and they don't want to know where they are because it's so painful to admit. But how do we move forward if we don't know where we are starting? We have to do that first.
My guest is Michelle Hasty, and she is a personal trainer, food psychologist, and yoga teacher and practice yoga. And she is a weight loss coach. And she has written a book to help people find a joyful approach to weight loss. And you suggest that if you're looking to transform your body, all you have to do is look in the mirror each day and acknowledge exactly where you are.
So that's a good first step.
Because if a negative emotions come up, and I think, no, I shouldn't think that way. I shouldn't feel that way. I shouldn't have negative emotions. But you say acknowledge them, remind yourself they're simply feelings, and do not have to interfere with your body's ability to lose weight.
Absolutely not. Yeah, this is what we want to compartmentalize. We want to say, yes, I'm having this emotional experience because I'm not where I want to be. And I can still move forward and do whatever it is that you feel like you need to do for your weight, whether it's maybe you do want to eat healthier or something. It doesn't matter what the step is in this example. But the point is that not liking what you see in the mirror doesn't have to interfere with your ability to follow steps.
And now you say, Michelle, stay present as much as humanly possible. Now that sounds pretty new agey. Stay present. How do you stay present?
I tell my clients annoyingly present. annoyingly present because unfortunately, you know, whatever weight someone's at today most likely is a weight that they're not trying very hard to be at. In other words, they're not trying so hard to be 50 pounds overweight. It's just sort of happening, which tells me it's their autopilot. So their autopilot's obviously not working. So we can't be unpresent or mindless because that's where we already know the results aren't there. So I have to get them to be present so we can change in the present, and then we can work on creating a new autopilot that's at their goal weight. But right now it's dysfunctional, so we can't use it. So we have to be present. It's all we have to work with.
Well, you say step two is about awareness with food. And you say in order to transform your body, you must eat when you're hungry and stop when you're full. That sounds too easy, Michelle.
Simple, not easy, I would say. The concept is simple. Eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full. That's a very rational, right? That's when people say, what's wrong with you? Why don't you have willpower? Why can't you just stop? Well, because it's not rational. And that's where we have to start meeting this irrationality and say, okay, so when we are eating outside of hunger, why? What's going on there? And we start looking at ways we can backpedal out of that space.
Well, you do say it'll take time to master, and you say you don't have to be perfect at it for it to work.
Not at all.
And so you suggest start by tweaking your current eating habits for at least 7 days. Do the following to get back in touch with hunger and fullness. And a basic question, you say each time you want to eat, ask yourself, am I hungry?
That's step one.
So if you don't know what food to eat, you say that's actually normal.
Totally normal.
So how do you go about?
You guess. Mm-hmm. You guess and you pay attention to the result. So if you say, am I hungry? Yes, I am hungry. What do I want? I don't know. And you open the fridge and you see pizza and you say, well, I guess I'll just eat that. And then you eat the pizza following the mindful eating rules, meaning you're aware and present, and then you enjoy it. And then afterwards you feel not so good. Maybe it wasn't the right choice. No judgment, just acknowledging.
I have a friend who's allergic to corn, and she knows if she eats corn, it's going to have an adverse effect that's not going to feel that good. But she occasionally eats corn with that knowledge. And okay,
absolutely,
I like the corn. I'm going to eat it. I know it's not going to make me feel my best, but I'm going to eat this corn and not. Yep. She doesn't stress about it.
No, you have permission to make the wrong choice. You just have to make a choice. And most often when it comes to my clients, they're not making choices. It's just happening.
You even suggest that to help somebody notice hunger signals, that they set an alarm for every 3 or 4 hours when the alarm goes off. And then you ask yourself, am I hungry? And then you can find your meal rhythm. Then you don't have to have that alarm.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that too long. But some people really do say, I just don't even know when I'm hungry. So that's something I'll use just for no more than a week, just to kind of figure out, because you will have a rhythm. Like, you're going to be hungry. You usually eat around the same amount of food. And so you'll know, okay, that usually keeps me full for 4 hours. Or some people it's 2 hours, some people it's 6 hours. So everyone's so different, but you'll find your rhythm when you do something like that.
You know, I once watched a man on a plane eating. He was reading a book while he was eating, and I have no idea what his profession was, but I was thinking, gosh, he's probably even a doctor. And there he is eating, reading this book, and I thought, I'll bet if you ask him in 30 minutes, he wouldn't even know if he ate dinner or not.
It's 100% right. Yep. The mind has to be part of the process.
And you say that, eat without distractions. You see people eating while they're driving, certainly while they're watching TV or sitting at the computer. And so you have to eat without distraction if you're going to learn how to stop when you're full.
Yeah, and it's not perfect, right? I mean, I don't expect people to never eat in front of the TV or eat driving. There's always going to be times when that happens. But once again, if you don't have an autopilot that is functioning, then you don't have the ability to do that yet. You can build that, but to get there, you have to eat without distractions. Otherwise, you have no idea what's going on with your meals and you won't feel fully satisfied. You won't receive all the joy and pleasure. You won't really know if you're full. So you have to be present and aware to build that skill. And then you can watch some TV when you want and, you know, you can break the rules. It's totally fine. I do all the time.
Well, in fact, you just said that you will enjoy it because I think when people aren't paying attention to the food, how do they even know how that food tastes? And food tastes so good that I wouldn't want to miss it by not paying attention. So what you're asking people to do is not going to detract from their enjoyment of food. It's going to enhance.
It is. But unfortunately, so many people are blaming food for their weight that they don't understand an enjoyable relationship with food. And so it's really rebuilding a very wounded relationship. Like, food is not the problem, but you do need to enjoy it. You can enjoy it. It's not like just because you have 50 extra pounds, you don't get to enjoy food, but other people do. It's not like that. So we do have to sort of rebuild the relationship so that you actually have room to enjoy it.
I often think it seems that we have the attitude for it, like food is the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I love going to France.
Oh,
it's
me too.
It's not just the quality of the food, but people pay attention to it. During the meal, they're talking about the food and the flavor, and they're fully focused on the food. And they don't rush. And they take their time to enjoy a leisurely meal with friends. I mean, in the middle of the day, I watch people. I mean, if a woman has a bookstore, she doesn't worry that she might miss a sale if she closes her shop for lunch.
Mm-mm.
She closes the shop, goes to lunch with friends, and enjoys every moment of it. And I so often think we focus, when you talk about, oh, the Mediterranean diet, that's a really good diet. And we focus on, well, what do they eat? What do people who eat a Mediterranean diet eat? And I want to say, hey, you're looking in the wrong place, I think. It's not what, it's how they
eat. Always how. The French, too, it's that. I mean, they're my biggest role models, the French. And I've read many, many books on French eating. In fact, I just finished one for French Kids Eat Everything. So working with my son, and they got it right. They really do. They got it right.
My guest is Michelle Hasty, and her newest book is Have Your Cake and Be Happy Too, A Joyful Approach to Weight Loss. And I see that because I go to France often and I watch the way they eat. And even a baker, we went by the baker shop. We didn't know him, but he just said, I'd like to invite you to dinner. I said, well, sorry, we're on our way to the airport. But
oh, my God. Yeah, food is everything to them. And you think about that because most people that struggle with weight think that's the problem. Food is my everything. But it's not. It's a dysfunctional relationship with food. Having food be celebrated and enjoyed and pleasurable is not a bad thing.
And they go by a natural appetite. You say that in your research, the ideal weight participants, because you study people ideal weight and people overweight, the ideal weight participants describe their appetites as something that felt natural, and they chose their foods for positive reasons. Because it often seems like people are choosing by what they can't eat or what they have to avoid.
Yep. It's a very toxic relationship. It's not just the thing that we eat to survive, and it's also not the thing, it's certainly not the thing we do for pleasure or joy, except for the moments in which they use it almost abusively, which is not with judgment, it just is. And then that can be a moment of pleasure, and then after is followed by guilt and shame. And so that's where the confusion is, because they so badly want joy and pleasure from food, they don't really allow themselves to do that most of the time because they're on diet. And then when they do mess up and then try to get pleasure and joy from it, it's outside of hunger, and then they're dealing with the guilt and the shame that comes with that.
So the first step is to live connectedly, connected to your own body and its needs and its signals. And then you say live intentionally. How do you live intentionally, Michelle?
You live on purpose. You take part in your life. You make decisions. You show up. And it's very similar to the idea of being present, but it's about looking at what your intentions are for living, for making the decisions that you're making.
Because you say living requires more than simply breathing. While breathing enables us to survive, surviving isn't the same as living. It's barely living. And you quote an article that a third of Americans are extremely stressed and almost half are living in an ever-increasing stress response. And if people are under stress, that's going to distort their eating habits, I think.
Yeah, and everything. The stress has become so normalized. It's like, yeah, I'm stressed. Oh, she's stressed. It's just stress. Everyone's stressed. And it's, I don't know. I don't think it should be so normal to be stressed. I think stress should show up when it needs to every once in a while, but it should be less rather than most of the time. And that's kind of the society we live in now.
So you say living with intention requires us to dig deep and recognize our limiting beliefs, excuses, and lack of clarity. And I think that's kind of hard, that if we believe something, and we probably believed it for so long, we don't realize it is a limiting belief.
Yeah, people will tell me, I don't want to believe that, but they forget that they choose to believe it. So they'll fight me tooth and nail to hold on to their belief that they don't even like. And like they'll say, well, you have to eat less sugar to lose weight, and that's what I know to be true. And I said, that's fine. You can believe that. That's not what I believe. And no, but it's true. I'm like, that's fine. Do you like that belief? Well, no, but it's true. Okay.
And so they don't even realize that they are holding on to a limiting belief.
Fighting for it most of the time, because at least that way they're not wrong. And I say that I do the same thing. It's no one's really absent of that, but we don't want to be wrong, and so we hold on to these beliefs we won't even like, just so we're not wrong. It's like, what if I was wrong for the last 40 years? And that's really uncomfortable to sit with.
Well, you say that if you're feeling stuck, this is the step that will help you move forward with intention and direction. And you mentioned that the step one in this chapter, Living Intentionally, is to acknowledge excuses. And you were just saying people don't want to acknowledge something, a belief that's limiting them, and they don't want to acknowledge excuses.
Yeah, we want to, it's like excuses are funny because they sort of dismiss the discomfort. So if you wanted to wake up and go for a run, let's say, and then you are at that point where you make that decision and you go, well, my foot hurts, or I'm kind of tired, or you make up an excuse, right? And then you move on with your day. Later on, it passes your mind, I should have gone. Oh, man, see, now what am I going to do? I don't really want to do it now. And that excuse, it gets you out of that discomfort in that moment and helps you move on with your day. But if you didn't make an excuse, you'd have to sit there and you have to just sit with the discomfort of, I'm just choosing not to run. Even though I know it makes me feel better, it helps with endurance, it's what I really want, it takes me closer to my goal, and I am choosing not to do it. And if you don't give an excuse, you're not going to want to sit like that for very long. So the next day, guess what you're going to do? You're going to go on that run.
After a break, I'll continue my conversation with weight loss coach and author Michelle Hastie. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman. I'm Nancy Wiegman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guest is Michelle Hastie, author of Have Your Cake and Be Happy Too. Yeah, you say that a scared mind may trigger a pity party, and you might find you start thinking thoughts like, poor me, I gained all this weight. How could I have let myself get here? I'm so pathetic. I obviously don't care at all about healthy living. I can't believe I've done this to myself. I can't do anything right. I look awful. No one loves me.
And it's not really the person's fault, too, because society is saying these things about people with who have excess weight. They're saying, why are they so lazy? Why can't they get their stuff together? And so it's like these voices.
They lack self-discipline, Michelle.
Yeah. How come they have no willpower? And like, it's not that hard. Just, you know, so it's not even our fault to think this way. It's just surrounding us. But we have to be aware that whose voice is that? And is it true? And I don't really want that anymore. I'm going to get rid of that.
Because you say these thoughts aren't helpful.
Not at all. Exactly. When people say, well, what is it true or not? Well, is it helpful or not? Why do I have this thought? I don't want this.
And you remind me that having gained weight is not the end of the world. Millions of people struggle with it, and it doesn't say anything about you except that you have a skill to learn and develop. So what you're doing with your book is encouraging people, look, this is a skill.
It's just a skill. Like, I don't know how to play bass guitar. I'd really like to. I don't know how, but I'm not going to beat myself up because I don't know how to play bass guitar. Nobody taught me, right? And a lot of people come from families where they were taught to clean their plate. They were given food when they're out of, you know, when they were crying, when they were babies. They were given food when things weren't going well. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen in your childhood, and it's not to blame, but it's to say your parents can't teach you everything. They're not skilled at everything. And so especially if you have parents that struggle with weight, they literally didn't have the skill set to teach you. And it doesn't mean you can't learn it now. You can learn anything now.
And you say your past is done. Now it's time to see your potential. Like you were saying, maybe you've never picked up a musical instrument. Doesn't mean you can't play one.
And some people are naturally gifted at things. And I think that's where the struggle is. They're like, well, that person just... it's just thin. They just have fast metabolism and I don't. Like, well, some people are just born to play piano and it was just meant for them and it's super easy. And other people are phenomenal piano players and they worked really hard to get that. And it's not that we have to work really hard to be thin for the rest of our lives, but you do for a certain period of time while you're getting through that learning curve. And then it's really easy. So piano players who practice and put in a lot of effort eventually play very effortlessly.
And you say, if you feel like you can't tell the difference between excuses and the truth, listen to your feelings.
Absolutely.
And here's where you put in a plug for yoga, Michelle.
Of course.
You say, in yoga, there's an emphasis on body communication, the belief that your body sends you messages through symptoms and feelings. Your body is in the mediator between your internal and external worlds, giving you the information you can't always experience directly with your senses. So if you hear your mind say you need to rest today, how does that feel in your body? Does it make you feel guilt-ridden? Does it feel like a way to keep you stuck? And if you say, if the excuse creates a negative emotion, don't listen to it.
Yep. Because sometimes we'll say, like, let's use the running example. I want to go for a run. And then we say, oh, I can't because of XYZ. And then you know immediately how that feels. Like, does that feel like a relief? Like, oh, thank God, because I'm just so tired. Or does it feel like, oh, I'm totally like letting myself off the hook here. I really do feel better when I do it. Like, you have to look at those thoughts that follow it, those feelings that follow it. And sometimes they're conditioned because sometimes we're not used to being still, even though we need rest. And so maybe we feel guilty resting, but we really needed the rest. And it takes a little bit of time and practice, but eventually you become connected to your body so much that you just know.
Well, since you mentioned yoga, I have often heard people say at the end of class, particularly an early morning class, you know, I just thought, I just could stay in bed and sleep late this morning, but I'm so glad I came because I feel fantastic.
Always, right? You don't go, man, I wish I wouldn't have worked out this morning.
Yeah. You don't say, I wish I'd stayed in bed, because you realize, yes, this was the right thing to do. And you say that there still may be a time when your body says, no, you need rest.
Oh, there's times, you know, I pretty much hold myself accountable to getting to the gym each morning, but I don't put any condition on what I do when I'm there. So I could sit on the floor and stretch, or I could run. It doesn't matter to me, but I do just need to get there. And there are times when I get there and I sit on the floor to stretch and then I'm like, yep, that's it today. Going home. Or sometimes I just go to the steam room. I don't even work out at all. But it's just getting myself to the gym each morning and giving myself the choice when I get there. Because I know if I get home, I won't make an honest choice always because I'll get distracted. Oh, I need to start working. I need to do this clean this room or something, and it's not truly what I want. If I was at the gym, I would be doing what I really wanted.
Well, next you say live joyously. And I'm sure people say, well, yeah, sure, Michelle, I'd like to do that. I'd like to live joyously, but I can't because whatever excuse they may have. So what do you tell somebody who says, well, yeah, I'd like to live joyously, but how do I do that, Michelle?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but so much a how question. It's really innate to us to want joy. And the best way I can explain joy is by really noticing where it already is. Those moments so that you sort of look right past, like giving my son a bath. I won't be able to give him a bath for the rest of his life, I would hope. So, you know, now that he's almost three, I'm like looking at like, I'm going to miss this, the sound of his little feet on the hardwood floor. Like there's so much joy right here in this world in front of us. If we didn't change one thing, you just start to acknowledge that. And I've even heard people, they said, take pictures of the ordinary moments and just look at those pictures because they're so special. They say when people, like when they lose someone they love, they ask them, what did you miss about that person? And they say the way they pronounce the word pillow or the phone calls at 8 p.m. They don't say the Disneyland trip necessarily, the big grandiose things. They say the little things.
I find that true with photographs. It's not the picture of Disneyland. It's that picture that I just happened to take of my mother one afternoon when we were just out in the yard and I didn't think anything about it at the time, but I treasure that little ordinary moment that I captured with a photograph.
Yep. Yeah, those are the special ones, and they're so easy to overlook. And I just really started to look at those ordinary moments and think, what is so incredible about this? And that definitely helps as a starting place.
So instead of worrying about what you might be eating or not eating, you're enjoying that moment of giving your son a bath.
Yeah.
And I think that would help you rearrange your priorities.
Absolutely. I always say when I got in my car accident many, many years ago, the first thought I had was, oh my God, how much weight am I going to gain? You know, because I was injured. And I was
weren't going to be able to move. Uh-huh. You were just going to be able to lie on the couch.
Stuck on the couch. And that was a turning point for me because I said, oh my God, like, are you kidding me? Like, you can't even lift your head and you're worrying about your weight. Like, maybe we should reprioritize here. And that's when I lost the weight was after that. So that was really my sort of aha moment with all of this. It's like, why am I wasting all this energy on this when I could be focusing on living?
So let's reconstruct this little scenario, Michelle. You have an automobile accident where you're incapacitated to the point that you have to lie on a couch, and your first thought is, oh my gosh, lying here still and not exercising, I'm going to gain weight.
Uh-huh.
And it was not true.
Yeah, I know. I lost 10 pounds the first month, so no, it definitely wasn't true.
And I think your story right there would give hope to somebody else who's finding this system, this technique that you have come up with, hard to believe.
Oh, yeah. And I always say, I mean, I know it's easy to say, but if I can do this, anybody can, because I was deep into the world of binge eating and body obsessions and all of that. So, and I didn't see any way out of it. So if I can do it, anybody can do it, really.
And I even wonder if we even know the extent of this problem, if I want to call it that, this situation that you just described, because women don't talk about it. I bet nobody knew, Michelle, that you were obsessing about food all day long. They didn't know that. So the problem probably is more extensive than we might realize.
Yeah, people feel really isolated in this, and it's so weird because most of the world is struggling with their weight, and that's sort of known. I mean, you can see it, and we talk about it all the time. And we talk about the obesity epidemic and all this stuff. And yet people are not talking about their personal experiences because when they binge eat, they feel like they are the only person on the planet binge eating. And actually, all my clients do it. So you can't be the only one.
And plus, you only see this select few that seek help.
Yeah.
Think of all the, and I say women because I think it's primarily that.
Yep.
All the women that are suffering.
Silently.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, that's really the goal of writing books and writing blogs, is because even if they don't reach out to work with me, if I could at least help them realize that they're not alone and that what they're experiencing is not only totally normal, but really a direct side effect from dieting and they realize this is not a me problem. Like, I don't have a personality disorder or a genetic disorder or a metabolism disorder. I have side effects from dieting. That's what I'm dealing with today. And if you can acknowledge that, that gives you hope to then say, so then if I stop dieting, I would at least eliminate the side effects. And then, you know, if whether you read my book or someone else in this field, get some help and support to find out what the next step is.
Well, you suggest, first of all, if you are under stress, you know, deal with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's going to be helpful. And that's why one weight loss expert highly suggests meditation.
Yes, I do.
You mentioned meditation and restorative yoga.
Yep.
For people who think, oh, I can't do yoga. I can't tie myself in a knot and I can't stand on my head. But that's not what restorative yoga is about. And you recommend that.
I recommend it, yeah, because you're either in what they call rest and digest or you're in fight or flight. And most people are living in fight or flight. Like, they're stressed about their weight, they're stressed about their food and all that. And think about the title of that, rest and digest. So you only digest food in a relaxation response. So when you're in a state of rest, and digestion directly affects metabolism. And so in my opinion, restorative yoga is the very best thing you could do to lose weight, because it puts you in an hour and a half, usually it's an hour and a half class of rest. And that means you're digesting, you're healing, you're losing weight, you're burning fat, you're doing everything your body optimally can do when you get out of the way and stop stressing. So there's just no better way.
And you say stress can seem to lessen. We're making progress toward our desires. We become obsessed with what we don't like when we feel helpless or hopeless in achieving what we want. And so one of the first steps is to pick up your book and read it, Michelle. You feel like you're kind of in control, that you're actually moving in the direction that you want to move.
That's the feeling I think we all want to know. The worst feeling is when you feel like I don't like what I'm experiencing and I'm not doing anything about it. And that's why people turn to extreme diets, because they just want to feel like they're doing something. Like, they don't want to just sit and do nothing and not move towards what they want. But unfortunately, it's not the right thing, in my opinion. So if you're moving towards what you want, you know, in a way that feels really good to you, whether it's what I teach or something else, you're going to be doing a lot better.
Well, you say you may believe that you have to follow some trick or try a gimmick to transform your body. And you're saying that a lot of times you run into problems because your belief system overrode your body system of burning the fat it doesn't need.
Yeah.
So that if you don't have these beliefs that are counterproductive, your body can burn the fat it doesn't need.
Yeah, like, it doesn't want to store extra fat. It doesn't like to do that, right? That's not ideal for you or your body. And so it's really trying. It wants to be working with you to get what you want, so it can work more optimally. But the thing is that if you're constantly in a stress response, how can it? You're not giving it a fighting chance.
And you say that it isn't a trick or a gimmick to transform your body, because that's what people really want. They want to transform this overweight body into a thin body.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that comes once again to that idea that when I lose weight, then I will have. That's what creates that urgency, the unnecessary urgency. There's not really anything that comes from losing weight besides weighing less. It's like the only direct result. But happiness, confidence, peace, freedom, none of that comes from losing weight. And most people will agree with that when they really get honest, because they've lost weight and not felt those things. So we have to look at, well, if I want peace and freedom and confidence and happiness, how else can I get that? Because that is not a guarantee from weighing less.
Well, you say it always comes back to how you feel. And for example, suppose I don't happen to prefer bread and pasta. I mean, I like them, but I don't obsess over eating them. But a lot of people say, oh, I can't eat bread or pasta. That I certainly can't eat that. I'll gain weight or I won't lose weight. And you say, allow yourself to choose that if you're not going to eat bread and pasta, allow yourself to choose not to eat them.
Yeah, and that's another way, another time we can take some advice from the other cultures that we have that are succeeding in a lot better in this weight department, like the French. They eat everything, you know? They don't limit things. And if you once again looked at what they ate and tried to copy it, you probably wouldn't have great results, because you could copy their exact diet, but you have to look at how. It's the how. The what is irrelevant.
And particularly since bread is kind of on that list of of enemy food. And I mean, they want good quality bread, though. Yeah. And they don't want yesterday's bread. They want this morning's bread. I've queued up in many bakeries in France. They're there in the morning to get their fresh bread fresh out of the oven.
Yeah, they'll get a baguette and eat that with butter and jam for breakfast. And we would like, oh, what? Bread? No protein? Like, it would be unheard of.
But you say you should use that using can't or shouldn't puts foods in the deprivation category. Oh, I can't eat bread. I shouldn't eat bread.
Yeah.
That so creates, there I am putting bread in that deprivation category.
Creates an inevitable binge. That's just restoring balance. Anytime you are deprived of something or just food in general, you will you'll have to binge. That's just that's not like a you thing or a personality thing or something in your genetics. That's just a human nature thing.
In fact, I wonder, I once went the experience when my husband's father was dying of cancer and our lives were in turmoil and I just didn't take time to eat. And so I lost a lot of weight. Just it was pretty much starvation. And when all that was over, I found my hands would just put food in my mouth against my wishes. I mean, my body would feed itself.
Yeah.
My hands would grab food and put it in my mouth.
Totally.
And I was shocked that my body just took over and said, okay, you've been starving me. We're going to make up for that.
Exactly. And it doesn't know the difference between you're dealing with that emotional experience and my diet said I can only eat this many calories today. It doesn't know the difference. It just knows it's not getting enough, whether it's physically or emotionally.
So you say to choose the foods, consciously make the choice and choose your foods that you want. And you say if you don't particularly like meal planning, don't do it. And you suggest that the best way to lose weight is meditation, that it helps you connect to your body.
Yeah, and among a lot of other things, though, the meditation is going to help you connect to your body. It's going to help you go into that rest and digest state that you have to be in to really burn fat optimally. And obviously, it makes you feel better.
And helps you practice self-acceptance.
Absolutely. No judgment.
Well, your book is full of good practical information, and I think people may find it too hard to believe. It's too easy. But you suggest, again, live connectedly, live intentionally, live joyously, live truthfully, live abundantly, live deliciously, and live fully. Thank you so much for writing this book, Michelle.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Michelle Hastie's book is Have Your Cake and Be Happy Too, A Joyful Approach to Weight Loss. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org. I'm Nancy Wiegman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.